The latest Marquette Law School poll is out 26 days before the November general election. We're breaking down the numbers here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It surveyed 805 registered voters this time around. It was conducted between September 30th and last Sunday. So that was in the wake of the first presidential debate and President Trump testing positive for COVID. The poll asked about the mask mandate. 72% of respondents favor the requirement to wear masks in public. Do you? How much attention do you pay to polls less than a month to Election Day? We're at 800-642-1234. Charles Franklin is director of the Marquette University Law School Poll, a professor of law and public policy. He's co-founder of Pollster.com and founder of PollsandVotes.com. Charles, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Well, we all want you to lay out for us what you saw in the presidential candidates and what the voters are thinking.
Well, what we've seen is a lot of stability is probably the quick take on this, that the vote has moved only very little, very modestly over the summer. Views favorable and unfavorable of President Trump and of Vice President Biden have also moved only a little bit. Though the Vice President Biden's net favorability, his percent favorable minus unfavorable, has moved into positive territory for the first time in this month's poll. He had been a little bit net negative before. He became a little bit net positive, so about a 5-point total shift. And President Trump became 1 point less net negative, though he struggled to get his favorability into positive territory. And we saw that the views of the debate were pretty one-sided, but that doesn't seem to have moved votes particularly. Instead, people tended to see their candidate doing well, or they thought both had done badly.
And when you say one-sided, clarify for us.
Yeah, when we asked, regardless of how you're voting, who do you think did best in the presidential debate? 41% said Biden, 20% said Trump, but 14 said they were both did badly, and a rather large 21% said they didn't pay any attention to the debate. There was a good partisan split on that. Among Republicans, 9% said Biden did best, 41% said Trump did best, but 21% of Republicans said they were both bad, and 25% said they didn't pay attention. Democrats were more positive towards Biden, 76% said he did best, just 1% of Democrats said Trump did best, and only 6% of Democrats thought they were both doing badly. And a little bit smaller, 15% of Democrats said they hadn't paid much attention. Okay. So that's the kind of partisan filter we often see, rooting for your side. But in this case, Democrats a bit more solidly seeing their candidate doing best. Republicans a bit more scattered with that substantial amount, 46% saying they were either both bad or they didn't pay much attention.
If you're just joining us, we have Charles Franklin as our guide, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. New poll came out yesterday. He's breaking it down for us with your questions as well at 800-642-1234. It's amazing to me, Charles, that with all the turbulence that we've seen play out here in the recent weeks, that's just not moving numbers. These are really stable numbers.
They really are, and it is striking. It has been, you know, in one sense, it has been all year. In another sense, it's been pretty stable throughout the Trump presidency. If you look at Gallup polling, his job approval number has varied less, and not by a little bit, a lot less than any other president since Franklin Roosevelt. Obama had been the previous low variability president, but Trump is well below Obama as well. And that reflects the partisan polarization we're living in. If we look at vote, likely voters give Biden a 5-point edge right now, 46% for Biden, 41% for Trump, 4% for Libertarian Joe Jorgensen. and about 9% are undecided. That number has varied only a little bit since May.
You mean the 9% undecided?
No, I beg your pardon. I meant, well, the 9% also is very little, but I meant to say that the vote split has not varied much. In May, Biden was ahead by 4, then in June by 6, then by 5, then by 4, and this month by 5. So you can see that really about a 5-point lead, give or take one, is really all we've seen since May. And while granted the big news of the year was the coming of COVID earlier in the year, a lot has happened over the summer, and yet there's very little change here in the vote split.
Well, let's look at how voters felt about President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis. What did you see there?
Well, first of all, our poll was being conducted while he got admitted, or it straddles it. So the first two nights were before he went to the hospital and got the diagnosis. The last three nights were afterwards. But we don't actually see very much movement in views of the president or his handling of COVID in that time. I will say that that's not very much time for the news to sink in. But 52% said they believed that in-person rallies should stop. 37% thought they should continue. This is after he was admitted to the hospital. But on the debates, it was the other way around. 67% thought the debate should go ahead, just 27% canceled them. And so there's a difference in the views there. Also, people were still learning about the president's illness. Mm-hmm. 33% thought it was a mild case of COVID, 13 moderate, and 11 thought it was serious or very serious. But fully 37% over the weekend said they hadn't heard enough about it yet to know whether it was a serious case or not.
Let's switch over to look at the vice presidential candidates. What did you measure there? What did you glean?
Two things. We looked at favorability of both of the candidates. And then we also asked in this weekend set of interviews after Trump was diagnosed, how people felt about them becoming president and taking over the duties of president. Let's do favorability first. It's fairly even. 41% had a favorable view of Pence, 42% an unfavorable view. Notice that leaves 17% who were unable to rate him. And with Senator Harris, 37 favorable, 40 unfavorable, and about 23% unable to rate her. It's not surprising that even after 3.5 years as vice president, there's still a significant percentage that don't have feelings about Vice President Pence, and Senator Harris not holding such a visible office even more. As for whether people were comfortable or had confidence that Pence could assume the duties of president if needed, 33% were very confident he could do that, 23% not very. And for Harris, it was 25 and 20 for those two numbers. So a little more confidence in the sitting vice president, a little less in the senator who's nominated for the office.
We are breaking down the new Marquette University Law School poll with its director, Charles Franklin. What do you make of opinion changing very little on the presidential race since last month's poll? Did anything surprise you, stand out to you about the latest Marquette poll? Views on the economy have turned sharply downward since February. We'll dig into that more. We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Charles Franklin here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're breaking down the new Marquette University Law School poll, less than a month to the November 3rd election. We have the poll's director, Charles Franklin, as our guide to the poll. It takes a read on everything from the president's approval rating, fears of catching COVID-19, to closer to home, Governor Evers' approval rating. Your questions about the poll, they're welcome. 800-642-1234. And poll director Charles Franklin stays with us for 10 more minutes. So, Charles, I want to take a look at what you heard from respondents on the economy, because I think you're seeing some, trending there that the economy is getting worse. What did the respondents say?
Yeah, we asked people two questions. One is the economy better now than it was 12 months ago, or has it stayed the same? Has it gotten better? Has it gotten worse or stayed the same? And that took a understandably very sharp negative turn back in January and February. 31 and 32% more said it was getting better than getting worse. Then when COVID hit and the economy shut down, we saw that number drop considerably. This month, the net is negative 26, meaning 26% more say it's gotten worse than say it's gotten better. That is slightly up from negative 34 last month. But it shows that people are responding to the dramatic change that hit the economy in the spring with the shutdowns and the reopenings at varying paces since then. But the flip side is that when we ask about what about a year from now, will the economy get better over the next year or get worse? 30% more say it will get better than get worse, 48 to 18. And this has held up since the economy turned down. We saw a net 21 last month, a net 31 the month before. So it's fluctuated a little bit, but it's quite positive. In fact, more positive than it was back in January and February. So I do think that fundamental optimism about the future is fairly striking, and it's been consistent over the last 3 months that people remain optimistic about the future, even as, if anything, they've gotten a little more negative about how much things worsened over this last year.
Right. Even in the turmoil, they're holding on to some hope here. They're seeing something that is making them hopeful. Let's bring in Daryl now from Menominee Falls. Hi, Daryl.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I wanted to comment about the debates last night, and specifically about Pence bringing up the fact that the American people have sacrificed a lot in this pandemic. And unfortunately, it's true, they have, and a lot of times sacrificed their own life because of a president who still downplays and ignores all the advice of the health experts that he has on staff. He still appears on television without a mask, downplays all the important protocol about safety with the pandemic, and also has come on television and say, don't be afraid of this, when in fact people should be very aware of how important this is, and he just has no regard for their safety. He's the one that is setting the example for the American people.
Daryl, I'm going to jump in here. Thank you for your comments. And we are going to, in about 8 minutes or so, be talking about last night's vice presidential debate. Daryl brings up several things here, Charles Franklin. Also, one thing is the mask wearing, which you saw some pretty stark numbers on.
Right, we did. We just asked, should masks be required in all public places? 72% said they should. 26% disagreed with that. That's up just slightly from August, when the mask mandate first went in here in the state. At that point, 69% approved of them, 29% disapproved. And it's striking that across the regions of the state, we see a majority, at least 60%, in every region of the state who agree that the mandate should be required. We didn't ask it in terms of a mandate, just should they be required in public places. There's almost no regional split. Support is 74% in Green Bay. It's 66% in the north and west of the state from Wausau over to the Twin Cities and further north. That's the one region where support actually has gone up over the last 2 months. It was 60% in that region back in August and 66. Now, there is a partisan split. Democrats are unanimous, 98-1 in favor of the mass. Independents, 66-28. But Republicans are evenly split, 47 in favor of mass, 49 opposed. So there is a partisan split, but the Republican Party itself is evenly split on masks.
We're talking with Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School poll. He's breaking down the new poll results with analysis there on what they might mean with historical trend lines as well. He's taking your call on the questions about the poll at 800-642-1234. Charles, I hear these echoes of partisan split. And one of those areas, I think, as well, is the percentage of people who say they'll vote in person on Election Day. What did you see there in those numbers?
Yeah, this is a sharp split, but it's also one that's been changing a bit over time.
Okay.
Overall, 32% now say they'll vote absentee by mail, 54% in person on Election Day, and 10% vote early by in person. But that's quite a shift from what we saw earlier in the year when many more folks were saying they would vote absentee by mail. The party split here is also striking. 18% of Republicans voting absentee by mail, 69 in person. For Democrats, 47 by absentee in mail, 39 in person. But if we go back a ways, that has been coming down, and it's coming down all year, really, since May when we first, May when we first asked about this. As a result, while there is still a strong partisan split by ballot type, it's a good deal smaller than it was back in May when we first, coming out of the April election, were thinking about a much heavier vote by mail.
Yeah. Do we know why this is a partisan issue?
Well, I think, first of all, it's presidential leadership, opinion leadership within the party. Donald Trump has raised doubts about vote by mail from the beginning. It's argued that it's fraudulent or potentially fraudulent. And his party's supporters have rallied behind that position and, in fact, have after initially being more positive than they are now, have become less positive about voting by mail within Republicans. Democrats, on the other hand, remain more favorable to it, but with doubts raised about the Postal Service and other things, have sort of pulled back from that initial favorability, even though, as I say, still a plurality, 47-39, still say they plan to vote by mail.
Let's look at the nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. Do voters think Congress should move to confirm her before the election?
Yeah, for a small majority, no. 44% say the Senate should vote before the election, but 51% say wait until after the election and then decide whether or not to vote. No surprise in a big party split on this. 81% of Republicans say vote now. 90% of Democrats say wait until after the election. And independents are almost evenly split, 39-41 on this.
All right. Well, you know, over a third of respondents said they've stopped talking about politics with someone in their lives. Can you tell us more about that question?
Yeah, this is one that we first asked during the recall election in 2012, when it seemed like partisan divisions had become so incredibly strong. Back then, about 33%, 32% said that they had stopped talking to someone about politics because of conflict over the election. This fall, it's 36% who've stopped talking, 63% who have not. In October of 2016, it was 34-65, pretty much the same thing. But once more, a bit of a party divide. Only 28% of Republicans have stopped talking and 29% of independents. But fully 46% of Democrats say they've stopped talking to someone. And that is up 7 points from where Democrats were 4 years ago.
Charles, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Charles Franklin is director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. Coming up, we recap last night's vice presidential debate. Did you tune into it? What are your takeaways on issues like the pandemic, healthcare, and the economy? Join in on your reaction, 800-642-1234. We'll be back to talk about it right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Vice President Mike Pence and Senator Kamala Harris met last night at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City, their one and only debate of the campaign, and we have morning after analysis here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Safe to say some things have transpired since the presidential debate last month. For one, President Trump's COVID diagnosis and hospitalization, which led to the addition of a precautionary barrier on stage last night. Did you watch or listen to the debate? Who do you think won? What moments stood out to you? We're at 800-642-1234. Laura Brown is an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. Laura, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
Well, let's get some of your top line takeaways from last night. What did you think?
Well, I think both vice presidential, you know, nominees really did do two things. They reassured their respective partisans that they could step into the presidency on a moment's notice, were the unexpected to happen. And that is kind of the first really job of every vice president. And then I think they each really did speak to kind of their bases in terms of continuing on what was the message from the two parties' conventions. And by that, what I mean was that Vice President Mike Pence continued to kind of talk about issues in a way that would be divisive. He continued to look for ways to make the public afraid of what a Joe Biden administration would be. And when you turned that to Kamala Harris, Senator Harris really discussed kind of the unity and the healing and looked to really hone in on the truth of what a Biden presidency would mean.
So, you know, this was a lot less chaotic than the presidential debate last month. Did you find that this was a more conventional, traditional debate?
Well, I think traditional is the right word. It was a more traditional debate. There is also something to the fact that both debaters were sitting down. That does tend to reduce the amount of kind of conflict that is more present when people are standing. Those plexiglass barriers also created a sense of separation between these people. But I do think that we shouldn't gloss over the fact that Vice President Mike Pence did still interrupt quite a bit. He interrupted both Senator Harris as well as Susan Page, the moderator. And I don't think that that is a successful strategy for the Trump-Pence team. They are really alienating the very voters that they say they need to bring on board.
Let's look at one of those moments. Both the vice presidential candidates brought up the possibility of a coronavirus vaccine. And here is what Senator Harris had to say about if she would take the vaccine.
If the public health professionals, if Dr. Fauci, if the doctors tell us that we should take it, I'll be the first in line to take it. Absolutely. But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
And then Vice President Pence took a different tact on the issue. Here's what he said.
The reality is that we will have a vaccine, we believe, before the end of this year. And it will have the capacity to save countless American lives.
And, you know, Pence said Harris was seeking to undermine public confidence in the effort to develop and approve a vaccine and saying, stop playing politics with people's lives. What did you make of that exchange?
Well, I mean, I thought it was somewhat ironic in the sense that what we have seen is that the president himself has been revealed by a video, an audio recording that he attempted to downplay the virus. So what you have is a presidential administration and certainly a vice president in charge of a task force that has failed to inform the public on a series of issues related to the pandemic. And they are the ones who have played politics with wearing masks and having mask mandates all across the country. And yet there is the accusation that it was the Democrats who were playing politics when in fact what the Democrats are saying is they need to follow the scientists.
We're talking with Laura Brown, who's an associate professor, director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. We're unpacking last night's vice presidential debate, getting your reaction to it at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in reaction from Nate in Milwaukee. Hi, Nate.
Hi, and good morning to you.
Good morning.
I was going to say that one of the things I was watching for, and I appreciate that the moderator brought up the question, was when they were talking about the global warming. And Pence basically tried to dodge the question by saying they're listening to the scientists, but not really, by blaming forest management for the fires, when the amount of the time span the fires can burn has been increasing. And that's not due to forest management. That's due to changing climate and weather. And he tried to say they support clean air and water, yet earlier this year, the Trump administration was trying to weaken rules in terms of what can be in water. So I think he dodged the question in a misleading fashion.
Nate, thank you for your insights. Laura, what did you see in how the candidates took on climate change?
Well, I mean, I think that's right. I do think that the Republicans are on the defensive with this issue, and there is a way in which they are trying to go on offense by arguing that, a Green New Deal would destroy the economy. Or that the Biden-Harris team would completely eliminate all fracking. We have seen, obviously, the Biden-Harris team take different positions on this over the course of this year. But it's important to realize that any new policy that would be implemented would be something that would have to be done legislatively as well. So there is no sort of certainty that any one policy is going to be done right away, but it is also misleading to argue that the Trump administration has, from a policy perspective, been good for the environment.
Let's bring in thoughts from John in Appleton. Hi, John.
Yes, good morning. I've been around for a lot of these debates and everything, and I expect the politicians to kind of continue on past that the buzzer for their allotted time a little bit. But Pence carried it to an extreme, which I found rather off-putting. And I don't think he really benefited his message doing that, because by just continuing to talk while the moderator was saying, well, thank you, Vice President. Thank you, Vice President. Thank you, Vice President. I think she managed to sort of cancel out his message, but he ended up looking robotic, is the best word I could
Okay, John, thank you. And, you know, Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief of USA Today, the moderator, she had called for asking for a respectful exchange and regularly reminded the candidate, you know, answers should be uninterrupted. How did that flow?
Well, so, I mean, I think what was so interesting was that Pence continued to interrupt. And what you saw was Senator Harris continued to stand her ground. She said, "I'm speaking," a number of times. She sort of checked him on that and pushed him back. I do think that the moderator, Susan Page, had more difficulty controlling Vice President Mike Pence than, in fact, Senator Harris did.
Let's hear one of those moments as they bring up the economy.
He will not raise taxes on anybody who makes less than $400,000 a year.
He said he's going to repeal the Trump tax cuts.
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking. I'm speaking.
Be important if you said the truth.
So we hear Harris pushing back. They're making it clear she wasn't going to let a debate opponent, you know, speak on top of her. Did either one get their point across on the economy?
Well, I think the Republicans and Vice President Mike Pence really do have a series of talking points on the economy, but similar to their talking points with regard to the environment, there are just factually wrong claims. The vice president went on to talk about a V-shaped rebound as though there is a recovery underway, but the most recent data do not show that. In fact, they show that the number of people who've been long-term unemployed is growing. We heard the other day the chairman of the Fed talking about the very much needed relief bill. And so there is this disconnect between what Vice President Mike Pence was saying and what is actually happening. And I think this is where there is difficulty with where we are. The vice president kept saying that the Democrats, you know, and certainly Harris could not have her own facts. But it was really many of the claims that the vice president were making, which were his own facts.
We're talking with George Washington University political scientist Laura Brown is here, our guide to last night's vice presidential debate. 90 minutes, no commercials. Did you take it in? Have you cared about VP debates in prior elections? Was this one different to you? Were there issues you wanted addressed that the moderator, Susan Page of USA Today, didn't bring up or didn't follow up on? Join in with your insights, what you thought, your reaction, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment with Laura Brown here on the Ideas Network. We're getting morning after analysis on last night's vice presidential debate, the one and only of the campaign. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last night was more traditional debate fare, if you will, compared to the chaotic debate between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden last month. Were you fact-checking on the fly? Where did you hear the candidates exploit the truth or be right on the money? Still time to talk about what you heard last night. 800-642-1234. Political analyst Laura Brown of George Washington University is our guide. Let's get reaction from Mary in Madison. Hi, Mary. What did you think?
Hi. I do not like both parties. I mean, the Democrats will say something against about Republicans, and Republicans say something about the Democrats. It's the same old garbage. And also, I heard about the Hmongs, how they're mistreated, and about other groups that need help.
So, and Mary heard a lot of partisan division there, Laura. Did you hear that as well?
Well, look, we have to realize that debates are structured in an adversarial format. This is about the fact that there are two political parties with a lot of competing ideas about how to solve the problems in the country. And I think that what we have seen is that we are in a moment in time that is particularly acrimonious. The parties have been kind of more riled up and also further apart than has traditionally been the case. I wouldn't say that I thought last night was mild. You had, Vice President Mike Pence reminding voters of Joe Biden's plagiarism, controversy back in the 80s. But you also saw, another side where both of them were really in some ways not engaging with each other. In some ways, I would argue they were talking to each of their voters much more than they were, in fact, talking to each other. So it was adversarial. And I don't think you can characterize this as not confrontational, but at the same time, they really both were looking to and did deliver policy messages and political points that would resonate with their respective party bases.
Depending on the trajectory and confirmation process of Judge Amy Coney Barrett, did you glean any insights on where they stand on Roe versus Wade or the Affordable Care Act, if those are struck down by the high court?
Well, clearly, in talking about the court, you can see where the parties have the greatest policy differences. You just mentioned, the subject of abortion. Certainly, Democrats are interested in sustaining Roe versus Wade. Republicans are interested in overturning that precedent. And then when you're talking about the Affordable Care Act, and this is really where Senator Kamala Harris wanted to press the point, because we are in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic. And though the Republicans and the Trump administration continue to say that they have a plan for protecting those with pre-existing conditions, they have never revealed that plan. That is part of the reason why the, quote, repeal and replace plan early in the administration that John McCain helped to sink never occurred, because there was no replacement. And it is also true that the Republicans in this Trump administration have been leading court cases against the Affordable Care Act. So what you see is that Senator Kamala Harris wanted to press this point, wanted to remind voters that should Ms. Barrett be confirmed to the court, then it is likely that we would see both the Affordable Care Act and Roe versus Wade essentially declared unconstitutional in one manner or another. So it is a stark division about what is the right path.
Let's bring in Linda now from Silver Cliff. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Watching the debate and seeing Pence, it was the usual Trump administration strategy of keep telling the same lies over and over again and think that people are so dumb that they, can't realize that that's a lie, saying that they did a great job on the coronavirus, although, we've got 5% of the world's population and we've got 20% of the cases and death. How could that be that they did a good job, and lying about Biden's tax plan and lying about how they want to give people good health care?
Well, let's look at one of those points, Linda. Senator Harris expressed a belief that the Trump administration didn't do enough soon enough to combat COVID-19. Vice President Pence disagreed and said their work saved lives. What stood out to you there, Laura?
Well, I mean, look, I think just like the caller said, the American people know that this coronavirus pandemic has not been handled well. We have more than 210,000 deaths in this country. We have more than 7.5 million people have been infected with the virus. This is not a portrait of success. And the fact that we are headed into a winter where, you know, Anthony Fauci is telling us that we could end up having double the number of deaths. It's quite evident. And I think this is where Senator Harris really did make the point that, you know, whatever they have done, it has not worked. You know, Vice President Pence attempted to shift the blame onto the American people, saying that she was saying that the American people didn't do the right things in all of their sacrifices. But clearly, where we are does not appear to be a success.
We're talking with Laura Brown, Associate Professor and Director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University, and she's giving us analysis on last night's vice presidential debate. Let's bring in Carol now in Northern Illinois. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Kay. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I feel like I have to piggyback on your previous callers, because I think it's even more than the lies. It's like a big brother mentality. You will listen to our side statistics and not that. I forget the exact percentage of the population we have. I think we're fourth or fifth, yet we have the abundance of the cases. And everyone wants to come to school here. We're leading in medical and technology. It makes no sense. Plus the fact that, you know, there's real problems with our judicial system, and it's too short to go into that. But what's on the plate today is the hurricane issue and the wildfires. A lot of us have family members that have backpacked to go, and this is a chronic climate problem that's exasperated by, you know, our population, and we need to get on this and not be bickering about who said what when. And, you know,
yeah, so Carol, Carol was really concerned that they just weren't getting to the points and really not delving into the issues. And there was a lot of one-liners, Carol, would you say?
Politics.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
And I feel that, especially on the Republican side, that, you know, there's just this level of aloofness, you know, the Park Avenue thing, which really seems to fit the bill that, you know, it's more about power than any one of you people out there.
Laura?
Well, I mean, look, I agree that in many ways these debates don't get to deep, serious policy issues. And they're really not going to be able to in the short time that the debaters have to kind of put their position out and respond. But at the same time, I would also agree that there is a way in which Vice President Pence appeared to be defending the Trump administration in a way that just, you know, seemed really kind of an affront to most Americans' sense of kind of decency and understanding, because Vice President Pence kept saying essentially that they've done a great job and everything is going well. And I think most Americans do not believe that's true. It's also clear when the White House has become a hot spot itself and the president has been infected with the coronavirus, then it is clear that they are not doing enough to protect not only the American people, but even themselves.
And that is Laura Brown, and this is the Ideas Network.